I would like to call to order Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors, January 15th, 2014 meeting. If you would stand and say the pledge and then a moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. First of all, we would like to welcome you to the meeting. We see staff members, citizens, and some school board members. We welcome you to our second meeting of 2014. Mr. Allenbrock, unfortunately, is fighting the flu. He and his wife have been ill. So let's send some warm thoughts to him so that he can get well, because we miss him up here. Our first thing on our agenda is a closed session. We will have a closed session. Mr. Weaver?
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711A.7 of the Code of Virginia, 1950, as amended for the purpose of discussing legal matters.
Thank you. Do we have a second?
I second.
All right. We have a motion by Mr. Weaver to go into closed session and second by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
And chair votes aye. We are now in closed session. Thank you. We will reconvene, Mr. Weaver.
Yeah, let me get my documentation
here.
Mr. Chairman, I move the closed meeting be adjourn and the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session.
So we have a second.
Second.
All right, it has been motioned by Mr. Weaver and seconded by Mr. Sheridan. We come back in open session. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone oppose? Chair votes aye. Okay. Now we will have our county administrators.
Madam Chairman, we need to have.
What do I have to do?
Usual certification motion.
Oh,
be it
yes,
resolved, to the best of my knowledge, only public business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711-8 of the Code of Virginia, 1950, as amended, and only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened, were heard, discussed, or considered in a meeting.
Okay, now I take individual votes. Mike? You say yes.
Yes.
That's true.
Aye.
All right, Don.
Aye.
Aye. Chair says aye.
Okay.
Ready, Don?
Yes, please.
Okay, so, Madam Chairman, a couple things on County Administrator's report, some updates for you. Just wanted to acknowledge Sheriff Washington. It's in the paper and on a couple of websites, but Sheriff Washington's been named to the National Commission on Forensic Science, one of just several dozen out of several hundred applicants for that national commission. So we're really proud that Sheriff from Fluvanna County is on a national commission. Pretty impressive. Mr. Weaver, you had asked about debt per capita. I gave all of you a copy
yes.
of the most recent report. That's the 2012 report. The 2013 report won't be out till probably March timeframe, but this is the ranking of debt per capita. We're actually at 14 now. Last in 11, we were at 13. It changed just a little bit, but that's where the numbers are
right
now. And you've got the summary of all 95 counties on that double-sided sheet that I gave you. The Fluvanna Partnership for Aging is now down to two members. We had one more that another resignation because the partnership hadn't met for some time, and the person signed up for a couple other things. And so we're going to be putting out a call for additional members. We're really trying to revitalize that now with the community meetings and the focus groups looking at senior services. I'd really like to see the Flumana Partnership for Aging take a leading role on senior services in our county as a collaborative and coordinating group. And there's a couple of very energetic members that are still there, and I'll let you know what districts we need representatives from and then try to get that revitalized and energized. There was also some questions about building inspections activity. I gave you a report that the building inspections folks put together that goes from 2006 to 2013. On the screen here, you'll just see just the 2010 to 2013 run, which shows the number of new homes, home permits, and then, you know, single family attached and additions and different types of business and commercial interests. If you go back to the entire 2006 report, open that quick. This will be hard to see, but I just want to show you as an example. You can see the run from 2006 all the way over to 2013 and see the total value of improvements or new businesses or new interests in our county. The big blip in 2009 was from the high school when the value went up to $82 million. It was when the new high school opened and came on the rolls. But then in 2010-11, dipped way down and then started coming back up in 2012 and 2013. So you've got that report in front of you, and it includes these 4 years plus the four additional years of 2006, 7, and 8, and 9. And then there was a question about Fork Union Streetscape. We're going to meet with the Fork Union Village Project Group. And so just as an update, I've got a little more extensive update if you're interested. To tell you the short and sweet of it, the project is still on track. The project had gone out to VDOT for review last summer. That came back. The request for proposal is scheduled to go out based on VDOT requirements in March. The contract will be awarded in June, and then I'm not sure exact start date, depending on who the contractor is, and then the phase one completion would start after that. It's not a terribly long timeline in that. I just don't know yet because the RFP won't go out till March. And then there are other phases. And so I've got a more extensive update we can do maybe on another night as we get closer to that the RFP rollout. But everything is on track. Now, that project has been scoped back two or three times over the years from initially going a long ways through Fork Union to a shorter ways from, I think, post office down to past Fork Union Military Academy, but not down to the, I believe, the Dollar General store, but not all the way to Academy Road.
That committee has surely worked diligently for this. So that's why kind of pressing and pushing that we get it done. Okay.
Right, indeed. And we got an email from the chair of that committee. And I had never met with that committee since I've been here. Staff had not met with them because they'd kind of become, the project had become dormant for some years. And because it started actually in 2004.
Right.
But it is ready to go and on track. We're just waiting. We waited for the VDOT this last summer, and then their scheduled time to put the RFP out for us was March of 2014, so that we can then award the contract this fiscal year and then start shortly thereafter.
So you will be meeting with the project
I've put that request out to him.
Okay.
I copied you on the screen, but I put that request out to him, and if they're interested, we will come meet with them anytime they need to give them an update status, the full update brief that I've got here. The budget calendar is on the website, and I just wanted to let you know Mrs. Weaver gave you a hard copy of it tonight with your package. It is on the county website, the only update, when you go to the home page and then you go to the budget page, the very first one on there is the budget calendar. But what we updated on there was the change of times of your meetings, going from 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock. So those times have been changed on that calendar, but there's no other substantive. What happened? I guess it didn't like that link. No other substantive changes on that calendar, but you've got You've got a hard copy in front of you. And from February on, it'll be a pretty busy time because you'll have 3 or 4 or 5 meetings a month based on your regular meetings and your budget meetings. And so please watch that calendar and mark it on your calendar at home. on the February through April timeframe especially. And then the 2x2 budget meetings, budget review meetings are next week, next Wednesday. These are the dates and times we have scheduled for each of you. Mrs. Booker and Mr. Ellenbruck at 9 a.m. on Wednesday, Mr. Weaver at 1 p.m. on Wednesday, and Mr. O'Brien and Mr. Sheridan at 4 p.m. on Wednesday. That will be the precursor to the formal presentation of the County Administrator's budget on February 5th, to be able to get some input back from you and to show you about where we're at as I finalize that budget proposal to present to the board formally on February 5th. So that's next Wednesday at those times.
In the Morris room.
In the Morris room, yes, sir. In the Morris room, correct. And at that time, we'll give you some draft documents, but then before the fall meeting, when we get the budget formally ready, I'll give you your hard copy of the formal budget presentation and then present it officially at February 5th meeting. But these will be the draft budget you'll see in our effort to get feedback from you on the budget before I finalize the proposal for your February meeting. The planning retreat for the board is in January, next Friday afternoon and Saturday. The agenda, I think I've seen, I emailed the agenda out to you, but it's going to be at the public library. And so you'll start at 3 p.m. on Friday and do a little bit of work that afternoon and then dinner break and then some work that evening. And then Saturday, the next day, we'll start with a common or breakfast in the morning and run through the day. Mr. Chandler will be here, Mike Chandler from Virginia Tech will be here to facilitate that offsite planning session. I just need one more survey back from all of you, and I'll get that back to him. And then I've given him the advance copy of like the budget work session brief or the economic development infrastructure brief from last week and a variety of other documents, comprehensive plan and things that he's gone through ahead of time in advance of your planning offsite. But next Friday, 3 p.m. at the public library. And that is open to the public. The agenda is already posted on our website. Just a reminder, too, the community return on investment modeling meetings are ongoing. We've already done two, one in Fork Union, one in Kent Store. We've got another one tomorrow night in Lake Monticello, and then next week in Cunningham District and Palmyra District at Antioch Baptist Church and Beaver Dam Baptist Church at 6:30 p.m. for each of those remaining three sessions. And we appreciate any interested citizens coming out to look at the return on investment model and to ask questions and to hear about the how that process works on development of infrastructure for Zion's Crossroads area. And then just a couple updates. We'll do with the update at the February 5th meeting about the county driver DMV checks policy that had been talked about at the last meeting, the county fuel farm controls, and we're still under review on broadband and the VDOT studies. And I'd be glad to answer any questions from the board.
Have any questions for Mr. Nichols?
Nope.
Anyone? No. All right. We will now open our first round of public comments. Please remember you have 5 minutes. Speak to the board. Stay on topic, please. Do we have anyone who would like to come forward to address the board? Thank you. State your name and your address or which district you're in, if you know.
I'm Frederick Adams. I live at 40 Adams Lane, Bremen Bluff, Virginia, 23022. I just wanted to advocate to ask you all if you could try to open the cosmetology program at the high school. I'm a junior right now, so I wouldn't be able to finish, but I would at least get a head start and then finish my year at K-Tech. I wouldn't want that to happen to anybody else because I know this day and age, a trade is a good thing to have, and some people don't have the money to go to K-Tech, so finishing it in high school is the only option they have. So I'd just like you to think about that. That's all I have to say.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, what was the program you were advocating for?
Cosmetology.
Cosmetology. Okay.
And barbering.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, if not, we will go on to public hearing and Mr. Nichols.
Madam Chairman, the applicant has requested a deferral of this ZMP request, and the applicant is here that can address that, but Mr. Payne can probably address what
yes,
your options
please.
Are going forward.
Madam Chairman, my understanding is that the applicant has asked for deferral based on the proposition that the board is not at full strength tonight because of Mr. Allenbrook's illness. And they would like the board, the whole board, to hear the matter. That's not an unusual request. It is unusual to be this late in time, of course, but nobody knew Mr. Allenbrook was going to be sick. You can do several things with that request. One is you can deny it and simply proceed to hear the matter, take public comment, and decide it. The second is that you can agree to the request, defer the matter, and take up the whole matter at a later date. There are other things you can do, and I'll get into those in more depth if you want, but those are the two that I would recommend, one or the other. If you want to hear it, you don't want to defer it, go ahead and take it up and decide it tonight. If you think it'd be appropriate to defer it, I would defer the whole thing. I would not open the public hearing and take it to another date because Mr. Allenbrook won't have the benefit of the public comments. And then if you defer it to another date, he would be voting on something he hadn't heard the way you have. So I think it would be, my recommendation is do one or the other. I will tell you that if it's deferred, it'll be re-advertised at the applicant's expense.
All right, thank you.
Any questions, I'll be glad to try to answer.
Comments from the board members? You heard the two that we can consider.
What were the other choices that you said you could cover?
Well, there are a number of others. One, you could open the public hearing, take public comment, and then defer discussion and action on it. But if you do that, then Mr. Allenbrook won't be privy to those comments. I mean, he could listen to the tape or something, but he wouldn't have an opportunity to ask questions or whatever it might be. The second thing you could do, and this is something that I think you have done, I have consistently recommended against it, is you could ask if there are people here that want to speak about it and let them speak now. The problem with that is that if you do that, the outside the public hearing context, then their comments would not technically be part of the record. So they would probably have to come and speak again anyway. The second thing is that if you were open to public hearing and then to just continue the public hearing again, you wouldn't have a complete record on one day, so everybody was here. So if I speak tonight, for example, and the matter is continued, then I won't know what's said unless I come back anyway. So I think you, in a real sense, I think you'd be doing a disservice to the public to do that because it sort of dilutes the public's input. So my suggestion would be you either take it up, do the whole thing tonight, or defer the whole thing.
All right, board members, what do you think?
Well, you have everybody here to speak at all. I think we really should move on. We have four of us, we're missing one, but there's certainly four of us, I think, can make a decision on it. And in fairness to the public and the people who want to speak, I think we should move on with it.
Okay. All the board members?
That's fine with me.
So we have a motion.
This is a revised language on the motion, so please use the one on the screen here, which you can either. If there's no motion to defer, then you need to open the go forward and open the public hearing.
Okay. What do you?
Yeah, it's a tough call because I know that this is a zoning request that has some controversy behind it, and there are a number of folks that are here to speak about it, but there are also a number of folks that might not be here to speak about it. So I'm kind of in the middle between doing it now or deferring it and letting the community sort of examine the problem before they come back.
Madam Chairman, in that regard, I have heard of some people that probably aren't here because they thought it would be deferred for whatever that's
worth. Or would they get that impression?
I was approached earlier about somebody thought it was going to be deferred.
No, news gets around fast.
It was out all afternoon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that didn't come around until what, this afternoon?
It was later.
Right. It didn't come up to the county staff, but it's out all over.
As you know, my preference on this is to maximize the public's opportunity for input.
Yes.
And if there are people that didn't come because they thought it was going to be deferred, that would give me concern. It's not legally inappropriate, but it impresses me as being has an element of unfairness to it to people that may have been in some sense misled. It certainly hadn't been the staff that's told anybody that, but.
Well, it's unfair to the people who have come here to speak, too. And it is unfair to the other people. So, you know, it really puts us in a bad position.
The thing that I think distinguishes this from a number of other cases is the situation arises from an uncontrollable circumstance, and that is Mr. Hollenbrook's absence, his illness.
I would also argue that a number of letters have come in saying that the notice and information with regard to this was relatively short. So a few letters came in even today and yesterday from that standpoint. So I would move that we defer. I would recommend that we move to defer.
Anyone else?
Just to be clear, all the notices for any advertisements are required for public hearings through the Planning Commission and through the Board of Supervisors have clearly been complied with. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw that.
So what we're really saying is we just start over then, basically.
Well, you start over for your consideration, yeah.
Not Planning Commission.
Yeah. Right.
It would if you deferred tonight, we would schedule for the February 19th meeting.
I mean, I don't care, but
somebody did approach me when I walked in and said, I understand that it's off, and I went, well, that's word to me.
I'm not going to.
So do we have a motion? Motion's on the screen.
I move that the Board of Supervisors defers EMP 13:02, a request to amend the Flavanna County zoning map with respect to 2.631 acres of tax map 30, section A, parcel 84B, to conditionally rezone the same from A1 agricultural general to B1 business general, subject to the submitted proffer.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
All right. We have a motion by Mr. O'Brien, second by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
And chair votes aye.
Okay.
Thank you.
Madam Chairman,
yes.
You need to be clear that the record shows that there are four members present and the vote was unanimous.
Okay.
Mr. Hollenbrook being absent.
There are four members, 4-0. Mr. Hollenbrook's absence.
And then, so we'll schedule that for the February 19th. Board meeting, and then it'll be advertised in 2 weeks in advance as required.
All right, thank you. And I hope we haven't caused any real inconvenience for people.
I figure there's quite a few here that's going to stay.
Yeah, let's see, we do have.
I don't think that's right.
We don't have that here. Just gather this way. Now we will go into action matters. H, grant application for FY15 school resource officers. Mrs. Gina Keller, school superintendent.
And Ms. Keller's ill, and so she's not here tonight, so she's got staff covering for her.
All right. So Mr. Birchlauter.
And as a precursor, as part of your package was you got a copy of the big package, this grant application package for school support officers or school resource officers. The actual request is for 3 SROs, school resource officers, with 4 years of grant funding and then followed by county funding. And then here's some numbers that go with that. So.
You said, did you say one resource officer?
The request is for 3.
3.
One for each of
the,
for
one for the
central,
elementary.
One for Carriagebrook and one for the middle school.
Okay.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I am not Mrs. Keller. I'm not even Mrs. Keller's backup tonight. I'm the backup to the backup.
Well, tell us who you are. Who are you?
Ed Breslauer, Director of Finance.
Oh, okay.
I know I've lost about 30 pounds, so I'm not the same person I was the last time I was on me.
I didn't recognize you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Particular?
Oh, right-hand side.
Okay. Good evening. I'm going to talk to you briefly about some options. There is a school resource officer grant. This is for starting in fiscal year 15. It's a four-year program. When you sign up for year one, you have years one through four. Year five on here, and with the plus mark, represents what would happen that you continue the program afterwards. When you do the grant from the Department of Criminal Justice Services, they put certain little interesting rules in there. As is noted, the funding estimate right there is only for salary and associated benefits, because that's what they will award. There are other costs that you have to bear locally. And the salaries are frozen across the grant. And since the grant's multi-year, some things happen. You're going to see the salaries would be frozen. That means things have changed, such as one of the factors that comes into this is the school's composite index. That changes over a four-year period. And the VRS system, the contribution rates are changing over the four-year period, but this is still computed to be in this process. Also, there's a limit to the grant size. It's $50,000 total. So even though the total annual cost, the total grant request might be for $152,000, they will only fund $150,000. So in the case of three SROs in the first year, the share is about $58,000, but you have $2,400 in local funding you have to make up, because that's in excess of $150,000. There's a big box that notes there's an absence of supplies, equipment, and vehicles. For the three SRO model, the estimate is that you need one vehicle at approximately $30,000, and then equipment and supplies per SRO in the neighborhood of $6,000, and we received those figures from Sheriff Washington today, who unfortunately is also not here this evening. And I understand that from the time frame that the grant needs to be executed, this is not a deferrable item. It needs to be executed pretty quickly. I'm not sure if Mr. Nichols has the exact time.
And the grant is set today.
The request.
Yes, it is. So the reason this is before you tonight is because the grant request has gone in. I signed off on it because it required a county official to sign on it to send it in, because the application had to be in by the 15th. But it is completely pullable. So if you had decided tonight not to do this, not to go forward with this, we would just pull the grant request. But to get the grant request in by the deadline, it got to us on Thursday, I guess. The school notified the county on Wednesday or Thursday. And so the only way to get it approved by you is to get it on your agenda now, even though we may want to pull it if you decide not to go forward. We didn't get the supplies and equipment and vehicles note until today. And there's a pretty significant tail to going forward with this grant request. But the sheriff and Mrs. Keller are the ones that are going to have to address the need. And so my inclination would be to defer. I've already signed it off as a county official sending it forward so they could submit the request. But the grant can be pulled. The grant request can be pulled at any time if you choose not to go forward with this. I just don't have enough information to tell you what the need for the SROs are versus SSOs or versus none.
Right.
That's a sheriff.
Well, the difference between an SSO and an SRO is an SRO is a true sheriff's deputy, a law enforcement official.
Right.
An SSO is a school security officer. And it's a slightly more complex position, but they're not a full statutory law enforcement officer. So we've chosen and opted for a full sheriff's deputy position here. There is an option that we didn't look at, but we ran numbers on for only one. And what would those individuals do? Well, they wouldn't be just a law enforcement policing official. You want them in the elementary schools, besides the fact that they are, elementary schools are a place of interest and you want to maintain security. They're also going to envision to provide mentoring and role models opportunities to those young people in their most formative years, so you get them exposed in an early date. That's the folks trying to get them in the elementary schools. So that's one for each of the buildings, central and west central are in one building. That's it.
So what do they do in the summer when school's out?
Well, typically I understand, for example, Deputy Shiflett, also, he reviews things, and with the enhanced school safety requirements, they're doing more reviews of school buildings over the summer. They check out, without people there, they check out all the security systems, the camera systems. But we're also doing training and scenarios. They were doing tabletop modeling last year, and they want to work their way up. So it's not as though they're not doing anything over the summer. It's also their opportunity to do training. That's when I...
He serves as a road deputy this summer.
Right. But so because he also has to do some other things.
He serves as a road deputy.
Probably covering for vacations for others and things, maybe. But
right. So but these three people would be security and deputy.
Well, if you go forward with SROs, are sworn deputies.
Correct. So the training and all that.
But they are sworn deputies. I just don't know any of the details on the rest of the need without the sheriff or Ms. Keller here.
And that's
a part of the problem is the costs and the additional costs involved. But maybe this is the most pressing need right now because of what's going on in the nation. Maybe it's the way to go. But I'm not sure. We can ask the school board, but I'm not sure you necessarily have to make a decision tonight. Yes. This is before you to know that the grant request has gone in, and if you don't approve it, the grant request will be pulled. But at least we need to get it visible, because sooner or later you're going to have to approve it if you're going to accept the grant funds.
Right.
But the request deadline was today. So
do you have any information from the sheriff on his position? And the school board, does anybody want to comment on that?
I can comment. Speaking from the school board's perspective,
thank you and good evening to all of you. I think the main concern here with looking at security officers versus a sworn deputy is that if there was ever an incident that did happen in one of those buildings and there was a security officer in that building, the sheriff's office would still need to respond, because that security officer would not have the equipment that they needed necessary to be able to provide lockdown immediately if that was the need within the building. And you're right, this grant definitely does come on the tail of all of the issues that have been happening nationally. And I've said many times in our school board meetings, Flevana is not immune. I think we need to realize that our buildings are older. The first round of grants that were available, we did not meet criteria for those grants because we had that equipment in our buildings already. We're already looking at the next phase of the grants for security entrances and visibility and camera upgrades for that next round of grants. But this grant is to actually be able to put a person who's trained and skilled to handle any incident that may occur, whether emergent or not, in a building and have that person accessible to staff.
Do you have any sense of the number of incidents per year that would, you know, that occur that would require not sheriff intervention but sort of some sort of disciplinary interaction
from the high school perspective? There are incidents there, several incidences there every day that would need a disciplinary function. There are also times that Officer Shiflett is called to Carysbrook and or the middle school. So having one officer cover all of our buildings, it's truly a stress and a strain on Officer Shiflett because he is the only SRO for the county.
So you'd have one at Carysbrook Elementary with the third and fourth graders, middle school, and it's already one at the high school. You want one at Central now.
Yes.
So it'll be four.
It would be a total of adding three to Officer Shiflett. Mm-hmm.
Where would the funding come from?
For the rest of the
$153,000.
And that is why we are bringing this grant to you with this request, because there is local funding that is required as a match as part of the grant.
The blue dollars on the screen in the three column is what the county would pay over the 4 years of the grant. And then after the grant's done, from year 5 and out, it's 100%. But then the tail below. Now, remember, that as Mr. Bressel already said, all the dollars here are based on level.
That's correct.
Nothing with VRS plus-ups or pay raises or things like that. It's just the basic cost. So the cost will be higher than that. And then you also have to have the equipment and supplies. I just want to make sure that our grants this may be the highest need we have, but I just want to make sure we know what the tail cost is for any of our grants, because there's an ending cost, and this is, you know, when you add the supplies and equipment and vehicles and the pay raises, you're nearing a penny on the tax rate.
So you're adding vehicles also with all this?
Well,
they would need to have a vehicle.
So that's three vehicles then we need to.
Thank the sheriff.
That can, and exactly, because that would come with, that is part of our request, and knowing that these SROs would need a vehicle.
So we're probably talking about $450,000 once all the grants are used up over the period of four years.
Five.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Starting into the 5 years.
Well, $100,000 for three vehicles, three outfitted vehicles, but they would last 3, 4, 5, 6, 8 years. Those vehicles, maybe they rotate in the pool.
Exactly, I would think that, because those vehicles are not being used and hitting the road as much as our other vehicles, those would be rotated vehicles.
But, and that's why I think you probably need the sheriff to address those specific things,
right,
and really cost this out along with the schools. But I didn't want to go forward without making you aware that grant request is in. You're going to eventually have to approve it or disapprove it, but you're not tied to it right now. Mm-hmm. It's just in because we had to meet the deadline.
Right, yeah.
So would one vehicle be good enough for three? In other words, you could drop one of the officers off? I mean, they're not going to need a vehicle when they're in the building, are they?
I would not suggest that, because if there was an incident that happened at another building and they were needed to assist, then they would have to pull a resource from someone going directly there.
What about the sheriff's department then?
And it would depend on the incident that was occurring at the time and the manpower that you would need to help assist with that incident.
And again, I think we need the sheriff here to specifically address those kinds of questions for you.
Right, because they're not going to be required to be road deputies during the school
during
year.
During the school year.
So
they would be dedicated.
We could get away with having one vehicle for the summertime when they would rotate shifts as road deputies.
That's correct. And if they were preparing for training or other instances like that, that's why I think that they would definitely rotate those vehicles during the summer, so that those cars that didn't have as many miles on it,
right,
they could rotate those vehicles, sure, to do so.
Yeah.
And I know that there's a lot of unanswered questions.
Right. And the other thing is, we've had concerns about our young people and the situations that they get themselves in, delinquency and so forth. I was thinking that these particular individuals could have some type of curriculum of activities to prevent our young people from getting in trouble with the law. There are many programs out there to help young people. I think that the officer at the high school teaches a course.
Mm-hmm.
In law, right?
I believe he's getting ready to also start a fishing team for us.
Yes.
Yeah, so they can be used in a lot of ways to touch the lives of the kids that they see that are kind of going in some wrong directions. Mm-hmm. They could have some parent relationship. I mean, they could be used and be trained in different ways to help our students, so we don't have them coming in here, see the judge, and spending all this money at Blue Ridge.
Are they armed?
Yes.
Deputies would be.
They are fully sworn officers.
It's, the security officer would
the
not.
The security be. Officer would not.
Would no. not.
And the grant gives you the option to ask for SSOs or SROs, fully sworn officers or security officers, or a combination thereof. This the request from our Louisiana County Public Schools, in concert with the sheriff, is for SROs, the fully sworn officers.
Do we have Officer Shifflin already? Cost for SSOs?
It would be something less than that, and I don't know. It wasn't requested that way. So.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure it is.
So what do you think? Do you think we should bring it back and talk about it some more when the sheriff is here?
Absolutely.
Well, you don't have all the information,
right.
That's for
right.
sure.
And I'd like to see SSO costs, too.
Yeah. Yes.
And see the SSO costs.
One of the reasons it's really here is that the grant request has gone in.
Go.
I want you to know that you're on the hook for that grant request to make a decision one way or the other. Right. If you decide not to go forward or something go forward or something different, we pull it back.
Right.
So there's no formal obligation, but they had to meet the submission deadline.
I think it's important to note in the last school shooting just this week that it was credited that the teacher that took the kid down had training specific to those kinds of situations.
And they can also train teachers. Not the SRO. As well. Mm-hmm.
No, I know, but I'm just the importance of training and as part of a circumstance like this.
And I believe Mr. Olenbrook would be an asset talking about this.
Talk about it.
I agree.
Yeah, and I think we would want to know a little bit more about their job description. Even some real scenarios, without names, of how things have happened and how that security officer has been a vital part of getting the situation down. And
from my perspective, the full cost spread so I can get it in the budget.
Right. Yes, definitely.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You did not make any inclusions in the budget for this?
No.
Okay.
Thank you.
No, this just popped up And once you decide, we'll have to put the year one wedge in there. I'm not sure. Mr. Breslau, do you know offhand when does the grant start fiscal year 15?
I'm not going to do anything today.
Okay. Yeah, so an extra 60,000 plus lots of other expenses in the first year, especially if you're going to have to go with vehicles and things.
2015 is when it actually starts.
Well, July 1st of this year.
Right.
Madam Chairman,
yes,
I know you all know this, but for the record, the lady that was speaking was Mrs. Camilla Washington, chairman of the school
board. Chairman of the school board. Would we so note that Mrs. Camilla Washington, chairman of the school board, was at the mic? Thank you.
Do we want to just move on this then? Or?
Yeah, do we just want to, do we want to move on until we get some more information?
Yes.
All right. We agree. We don't have to make a motion.
So tabled.
Tabled. Yes.
Do we motion to table?
You don't need a motion.
Okay.
Table. You will need a motion at some point either to approve it or withdraw it or modify it.
Okay. We are now with presentations, and I'd like to call Dr. Pamela Ross, Regional Community Services Board for Region 10 Legislative Update.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And you live in Savannah, don't you?
Yes, ma'am, I sure do.
I thought so. I recognize you.
It's an honor to be here. I am Savannah County's representative to Region 10, and I wanted to thank you for this opportunity to provide some important legislative updates. Incidentally, January is Mental Wellness Month, and this is great timing to talk about mental health issues. I'll start by sharing with you some of the accomplishments of Region 10 for fiscal year 2013. A total of 679 individuals were employed agency-wide, and agency-wide means Charlottesville, Albemarle, Greene, Louisa, Nelson, and Savannah County. There was $24.4 million in compensation, $35 million in total revenue, and a total of 6,732 individuals served. Now break Savannah County out of that, and we had 577 Savannah County residents served at a cost of almost $1.4 million. Now, because of Region 10's ability to braid and blend funds, they were able to support 37 out of the 61 programs that currently operate in a deficit. And for every dollar received, I've seen some comments about return on investment. Well, for Region 10, for every dollar received, the organization generates about $23 from other sources. So it makes for an excellent return on investment. We've heard some allusions to discussion from our school board chair, and we've witnessed many sobering examples for how and why mental health services are very important. They're critical for the health of our citizens and the safety of our communities. And the county's financial support, regardless of the amount, is critical to ensure that our most vulnerable citizens have the care that they need and what they need to keep our community healthy. So Regents 10's request of the Board of Supervisors are our consideration for three particular areas. There are three services that are most significant for the 37 programs that operate in a deficit. One is medical services or psychiatry services, and I'm going to ask Mr. Charlie Fawcett, the director of our Fluvanna County office, to give you some background logistical information about why that's important for our county. The emergency services, crisis intervention, and also case management, which is limited to the seriously mental ill population and individuals with intellectual disabilities. So what we're requesting is that you, just humbly and respectfully, that you consider any additional funding that can be targeted to one or all of these particular aspects for services. And with the increased demands for the services, Region 10 is seeking funding at all levels, not just locally, but also at the state level, as well as federally. And again, the support of Fluvanna County is critical in order to decrease our community's vulnerability and to take care of our most vulnerable citizens and to keep our community safe. I have a copy of our legislative report that I'd like to bring forward to give to each of the supervisors. And I will turn this over to Mr. Charlie Fawcett. And also I have present with me Mr. Robert Johnson, who is the executive director for Region 10.
Hi, Board Supervisors. I just wanted to add about the psychiatry is that we do have limited psychiatric support here in Fluvanna, but right now we don't have it in the county. We have to send our local residents up to Louisa to our office there to receive those services. So we're hoping that with some extra funding, we can have that provided here in town. With our, I don't know if you've seen the renovations that are happening in our building down here, we're gonna have a lot more space to use. And we're setting aside two offices, one for a psychiatrist and one for a nurse, not full-time, but part-time. So we're hoping that we'll be able to provide much better services for our local people.
Thank you.
Robert Johnson. Good evening, Madam Chair. And,
good evening.
That's the members of the board. I want to make sure that the board does understand that we are always in this position of asking, but we also would like to share some of the accomplishments of the Region 10 Community Services Board. While I would obviously think that we are somewhat special, I have to recognize that there are 39 other boards that think the same of themselves. I was in Richmond today. We were discussing all the bills that are coming up before the General Assembly, and I had a chance to look at the CSB there, which recently got a grant, which is going to allow them to do something, which I believe is going to be an important step in the future of care for individuals who have behavioral health disorders. And that is integrative care. That's the next thing. That's healthcare reform. And it essentially involves creating a no wrong door environment where folks who are underinsured, who are poor, indigent poor, especially those who are most vulnerable, have the ability to have their primary care taken care of in the same environment that they're having the behavioral health care taken care of. Now, that sounds obvious to you, but we've never done that. We haven't done that before, and efforts to have that type of care provided have always been grant funded. Well, at Region 10, we've actually been in conversations with Martha Jefferson Hospital to begin some pretty strong steps in the next year to have that, not just at the Region 10 facility in Charlottesville, but to spread it out through Fluvanna, Greene, Louisa, Nelson, all of the other counties that are under Region 10, and Albemarle County as well. So I wanted to just share that. We're doing that, and we're very excited about it. I'm personally more excited about that and some of the stuff we're doing with mental health first aid, which you may have heard of, which is getting to folks who don't have mental health issues but have loved ones who may, and teaching them how to work with those individuals, potentially to refer them in, but to do no harm. At the very least. And we're finding the trainings that we're doing, those 8-hour trainings, to be very helpful to the community. so helpful indeed that I'm starting to suspect that in all my long career, this may be the game changer I never thought would happen, reaching the folks who don't have the diagnosis, reaching them and making them less afraid of these potentially deadly diseases. So I just wanted to say that we're going to be moving very strongly in establishing integrated care in the very near future. And we're excited enough about it to say that we think that our model, once it's up and running, with potentially Charlottesville being something of a flagship, spreading very quickly to the other counties, and having all of them renovated so that it becomes an attractive environment for our consumers, the community at large, but also good work being done, that it's going to be something that makes us a model of excellence. And I wanted to share it with you tonight.
Thank you.
So I'll cut it short at that. You guys had a long day.
Thank you. Okay. You have any questions for Region 10? Questions? You said you served 577 large group children? Because you're in the schools, I know.
In the school systems?
In the school systems, we probably have, something like 50 or 60 kids that we serve on a daily basis.
Right. Okay. Thank you. There's such a connection between Region 10, SCA, social services,
CHIP.
Schools, CHIP. All of us are connected and trying to know what. Thank you all very much for the work that you do.
I'll give Mr. Fawcett a call, but I'm interested in the space renovation and how much space you'll have left over. I've got some potential ideas of collaborative services too.
That sounds great.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Okay. Next, we will have Board of Equalization wrap-up summary. And I'd like to call Mr. Everett Hanna to the mic, please.
Okay. This should be short. The Board of Equalization, we're charged with equalizing real estate taxes. We're the last quarter of last resort for the people. This year, 2013, we had 55 people, customers, if you will. And you all have a copy of the report, I believe.
Yes, we do.
And it's self-explanatory. The board has nothing but praise for the Commissioner of Revenue and his office over there. They were very helpful to us, as was Blue Ridge Mass Appraisal. They had a couple of mistakes. We caught them, and mistakes happen, and that's what we're there for. We're not going to be functioning next year, so you don't have to put us in the budget. You're 15, you will.
You're in the budget already.
But we used the, just so you know where we were located, it was right in a little building right in front of the Commissioner of Revenue's office. We used that. Mm-hmm. And we seemed to help all the people that came. We didn't have anybody that, I guess, was real upset with us.
Right.
We always have some people that have an issue, and a lot of times they're legitimate issues.
Right.
And so it sounds like it went a lot better this time than it did the last time that we did 5 years ago.
Yes.
Indeed.
So I'm very well pleased with it.
Yeah, same firm, and
right.
That same firm is the kind of firm you just approved last
right.
meeting.
Right.
They will be doing the administrative reassessment this year,
right.
this calendar year, and then the Board of Equalization will meet in calendar year 15 to establish hearings again for citizens that have concerns.
Right.
I was on that board this last time, 5 years ago, and I think that this time that we gave them an understanding of what we expected and what the people expected, because we did have a lot of complaints previously. So I was very well pleased to hear.
We did not have any complaints per se. What we did have was questions.
Sure.
And
They were legitimate questions on size of buildings and that kind of stuff. But it was,
you're always going to have some of that.
Right. There was no real, shall we say, animosity. You know, it was just
and you corrected friendly. Some of the errors that were made.
Well, we did.
And,
we did.
And that's good.
We corrected everything.
Sure.
And I think the bottom line was when we got finished, I think the tax rolls went up anyway. So we did a good job.
Right.
Anybody have any questions?
Any questions?
Very good.
We would like to thank you for the work that you did. Thank you.
Yes,
thank
volunteer
you so much. We appreciate it.
And I hope the rest of the people that serve you thank the rights. Did you thank everybody?
Ma'am.
Did you say thank you to everybody on here?
Everybody, yes,
all
ma'am.
All right, good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, pass it around.
Next, we will ask our school board members to come to the table, please. And they have given us a folder.
This one is
it?
It's the Manila folder. We can't miss it, huh?
And we welcome you. We always love to see you all sitting across from us. And we apologize to the audience for your backs to them, but they know. They know the game. They know the routine. Thank you. And I think Brandy has to do something.
Okay. Reconvene. Good evening.
Roll
call.
Ms. Carr.
Yes.
Ms. Hayes.
Yes.
Mr. Rittenhouse.
Yes.
Ms. Carr.
Yes. Good evening again, Madam Chair. Thank you so much for allowing us to take just a little bit of your time this evening to start the conversation and give you some preliminary information regarding our budget. As you know, that this is a very difficult time to start planning for school budget, just with the governor's budget being released, and now we have a new governor sitting in the seat. So we are looking at some things that we are thinking that are going to be coming our way for this upcoming fiscal year, and starting to plan and work together as a board to design our moving forward with our plans and our years, our next year 3 to 5 year plan for where we would like to be as a public school division. Mm-hmm. You've already heard that Ms. Keller is out sick tonight, and but Mr. Winkler's here and would like to share some just basic information that Ms. Keller would have shared with you if she had been here. And there's also a slide that Mr. Breslauer will go over with you and will answer any questions that you may have regarding your financial piece.
Okay. Can everyone hear the school board? Okay. All right. Mr. Winkler.
Yeah. First, I'd like to extend apologies from Ms. Keller. She is deaf
and deaf. Oh, give her a round. No.
I'm sure I won't be as eloquent as she is, but
yes, you will.
I'll try and interact. I'm sure I'll be relatively brief, but I'll be glad to entertain any questions. Mr. Breslau was talking about the overall budget, just give an overview, some suggestions. Washington's already said this is all of our numbers are preliminary as of right now. It's important to note that we've already started our discussions with our administrative team, all of our principals and grade level teachers and staff members. Just some things to consider, and I think they're highlighted in the packet there. The things that we have to do, the VRS increases. We look at the VRS for teachers alone, it goes from 11.66 to 14.5. Our group life increase rate goes up from 1.19 to 1.24. Retiree health credit is going up, that rate is going up from 1.11 to 1.18. Also to note, we've been this busy the last couple of years with the VRS and the transfer of what we have to do for the minimum share for the employee. Have to at least 1% again this year, and then keep in mind by 2016, July 2016, we have to increase a whole of 40%. We will do that all at once this year, or we'll do it over the next 3 years at 1%. One of the things we would like to continue to do is, with your help, is to continue to hold employees harmless. And if we would do that over a yearly basis at 1%, it would be about 1.2%.
What's that translate into money?
That would be a question for Mr. Breslauer, and I'm going to cover that, but can you our pocket heads for 1.2.
1.2% would be about $65,000. 1%.
Another question on that, Mr.
Weaver? Yeah, I heard what he said. It was $65,000 on the 1.2%.
Yes, sir.
I'm actually curious about the rest of them, but you said he was going to address that.
Oh, so. Yes, sir. And I'll be glad to throw in some numbers to him. What I don't know is that, like I said, I'll make them up if I need to.
There you go. Just make them low when you do.
You're going to make them up.
If you answer quickly, they think you know what you're talking about.
The authoritative.
Well, that's why I didn't talk that much. Another thing we're looking at is we'd like to mitigate the health insurance costs. We have a flat rate of $439.73 for the last couple of years. One of the things we'd really like to look at and take into consideration is adjusting to where the county is, the county match. Our salary scales. Again, we have the models in place. We have to develop a few for the administrators. We would like to look at that in detail. We've begun those discussions with both staff and administrative team. One of the issues we will have to do is resolve that 0 to 7. They've been frozen for so long right now. You're a 7-year teacher. Again, 7 years of experience within the classroom, really 8 years, because you get the same as the first. Is this getting the same as the brand new teacher?
You don't have the steps anymore, per se.
No, our steps are lumped.
Yes, are lumped.
Is that, and then after that, is it that much a span between all the rest of them?
Okay.
4 years, the next steps. Okay.
Again, looking at the salary scale, we'd like to remain competitive more around the county, certainly with Louisa. Louisa is a wonderful county. One of the things important to acknowledge and should have done this early on is we realize the availability of resources to the county and are sensitive to that. We're looking at staffing. We have some staffing needs. You heard the young man speak this evening in favor of increasing our CTE. We have a lot of facilities over there at the high school that are not being utilized right now. We need a few more staff members in there to reach our kids' needs. We have some areas of math. We'd like to look at the class size of the high school and problem needs in special ed. In addition, we have some funds that are going to be expiring on us this year. Some of them date back from the last couple of years, our 1003G. In total, that was about $600,000. That goes away.
What is that again?
It's 1003G. It's a school improvement grant that was given to the elementary schools years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, like I said, right around $600,000. It was a 3-year grant extended.
Right.
We have the school, the teacher evaluation pilot grant that goes away this year. And Mr. Breslau will outline exactly what those mean, what we need to put into the budget to compensate for those. Questions for me, as far as we're looking at, again, caution, preliminary, we're looking at everything.
Are you putting in the career tech courses that are not open, cosmetology and what else, electricity? What is the other one? Is it one or two?
Looking at cosmetology this coming year, possibly something in the health trade, standing out, maybe carpentry, electrical, and there's one other question.
Were we looking at anything with the first responders, with the fire department?
Yes, we do have some of that.
That can solve another need in our county.
I understand.
Or help
we're looking at doing that, not on a whole scale, but cosmetology will take up lots. I mean, it'll go up immediately.
Oh, yeah.
So maybe bringing in some part-time to address some of the CTE needs. In the healthcare area.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Yes, ma'am. If you don't mind, I'll turn it over to Ms. Breslau to give an overview of some of the numbers.
Good evening again. Governor McDonald proposed his budget on the 16th of December. Shortly afterwards, the Department of Ed passed out what those little details are. And there are certain things to consider there.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that
the lower average care is under the state's average daily membership projections because it's easier to track and we don't spend time discussing why our projection is different from the state's. And that way it just follows the models up and it's clear and you don't have variability in the formulas.
Are you going to try to make sure that you don't over project this year?
They don't use the state's.
Because you did do.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And
then it cost
us. And really, and one of the requests of the board at our last meeting was to really scrutinize more spending at this particular time so that we're being able to look at those average daily membership numbers more closely and look at what we're spending so that we can make sure that if there is an offset at the end of the year, that there's not such a wide gap.
Yeah. So you're using the state's projection, because last year the state projected and we had
and you all went over their state projection, which cost us quite a bit.
Yeah.
And at this stage of the year, just because we're heading into budget season, the second you know any numbers that may have to come out of fund balance, we'll need to know, because that'll affect how CIP gets funded for next year too.
Those next numbers will be released in March. Is that correct?
March 31st.
Yes.
But what's the current shortfall now?
It was as much as $311,000. We're lower than that. We're actually, our drop is not what the state's projecting. We're shallower than the state is projecting.
Okay, but what does that mean in English? $300,000 short or?
$230,000.
That's okay. For this year? Mm-hmm. We're looking at another shortage?
Well, Mrs. Keller talked to us about $300,000 to $400,000 earlier part, and now it's down to $200,000. So that's a yay.
Yeah, but historically we never had any like that except the year before. So this is just unusual.
Yeah, it's because the school's budget has been down to the bottom.
Well, it's because we've been over projecting. That's the reason for that.
Well, that's good, maybe.
Not when we come up with a deficit at the end, it's not good.
So a little cushion in there. But anyway, let's go on.
Well, just because it affects CIP.
Yeah.
Because it's going to come straight from fund balance, unless there happens to be some extra money left at the end of this fiscal year. Mm-hmm. And it's a tight fiscal year, so we just need to track with Mr. Breslau and Mrs. Keller and see what the numbers are as we go forward.
As I said, while the average daily membership is going down, Governor McDonald put an astounding amount of money into the Commonwealth's budget. Education saw some of that. Our net increase over what was appropriated for us in May of 2013 is about $780,000. The overwhelming majority of that increase is all in standards of quality areas. And that means that those funds are essentially designated for specific programs, so we can't shift the money around freely for us.
So the composite index then has gone down to what? The
composite index went from 0.3924 to 0.3824. That means on every $100,000 of projected program thing, we get another $900.
So we're getting, you say $700,000, a little bit more?
$780,000 more for predominantly standards of quality programs. So those are designated.
So what was the composite index based on what year? The new composite.
The new composite index for fiscal years 15 and 16 is going to be 0.3834.
For 15 and 16.
It's the base year, it's fiscal year 2011.
Oh, okay. Based on 2011. Okay, thank you.
With the increase in the standards of quality funding, there's also an increase in the required local match, so it's important to mention that. But that goes up by about $260,000, so we have to have $260,000 more in local funding to recognize the additional $780,000. It's not free. Mm-hmm. Some things that didn't happen. Last year we had a 2%, we called it a 2% state compensation adjustment or raise. There isn't any included in this year's budget proposal. The VRS employer rate increases for teachers. It's part of the multi-year effort to stabilize the Virginia retirement system's fund balance. So it will continue to go up every biennium. So we go up from 11.66 for teachers to 14.5. The net increase after you adjust for what the state gives us is a $411,000 increase in funding. We've got to go up to offset that increase from the current one to the new one.
But you can do that over 3 years?
No, you have to do that in 1 year. Mm-hmm. That's just the employer rate increase. The other adjustment is a result of VRS reform, which is back in 2012, the General Assembly voted to restructure it, wanted to pass the 5% employee share that employers were paying. Employers were paying on behalf of employees to the employer's hands. When the General Assembly did that, they said, okay, you have to give them an offset raise. They gave school boards the opportunity to do it either in a lump sum or some number to get to 5% by July 1st, 2016. Because when the General Assembly did this, they didn't pay attention to the fact that when you give somebody an offset raise, and you raise their salary, and the amount that you have to pay in the VRS goes up, and the amount of Social Security goes up. And when you did that in one lump sum, that increase, a little, that portion of the increase one year was over $260,000 for the schools. For the county, it was about, the cost, I think, was $79,000. Ours was just under four times larger, which is appropriate considering just under four times larger. So we've been doing it 1% a year. And then with the offset raise, the school board has included a slight hold harmless so that when people get an increase in their take-home pay, the increase that they have to pay in VRS and the increase in Social Security doesn't
take off that rate.
Doesn't come out of the 1% where they then have a net drop in pay. Mm-hmm. They're going to get more money on their stub when their take-home can drop because mm-hmm. they're paying more taxes.
Right.
That's my only explanation of that. There had been talk about increasing the employee total share beyond 5%. There's no indication that that's moving very far, so that's good. And then we mentioned the transfer employee share and offset. The next thing is there's a table that's the summary comparing our FY14 state funding to the governor's proposed. That's where it shows the net increase of $780,000. The biggest increase comes in what are called the standards of quality accounts. That's where you find money for the majority of the money for textbooks, books, basic aid, sales tax funding, the VRS, Social Security, et cetera. That's $1 million. The other accounts dropped by $346,000 for incentive. That's where the compensation adjustment was. The Virginia Public School Authority funding. Our public school authority funding dropped because we went from six schools during the part of FY13 and 14 five schools in FY15. One net came out of the mix. That's $26,000 less there. Categorical accounts, it went up $3,000. That $3,500 increase is in the reimbursement for food, for lunches and breakfasts, and that money goes into those accounts that aren't accessible for general operating activities. The lottery funded account went up $48,600. That's a net. The largest share of that is actually associated with, largest shares are associated with textbooks and with the governor's school program, which is a flow through account for us. So simply that increases $780,000. And most of that though is focused on the things we have to do. It's not necessarily discretionary funding. Just a little bit over the general points of consideration. And then I have a summary that shows out what some of these costs are. And that's on the third sheet and the one page number that I have as well. So there are points of consideration, and some of these summarize in dollar value what fiscal Winkler said. I don't have it broken out here, and I didn't bring something that breaks out, for example, what portion is VRS, what portion is group life, and which portion is retiree health care credit. Suffice it to say that of the $411,600, since you have a 2% increase on a teacher, 2.5% increase or so, 20% increase in the teacher rate, that's where the bulk of it is, whereas group life and retiree health care credits are in the neighborhood of 0.05%. So they represent relatively small things. There's still in the neighborhood of tens of thousands of dollars when you have a $21 million salary portion of your personnel budget. When you have benefits on much more. So that's still not insignificant, which is still worth something.
Important to know here, these are given, the 411 is given. You can't escape that.
And that includes the VRS offset raise. We can't avoid the offset raise.
Right.
So those are things we have to pay, and again, that's the net, because we do get additional funds under the standards of quality portion for towards the increase in VRS, group life, what they expect of Social Security. If that only pays for the 60% of our positions that are identified as standard of quality, and it only satisfies the standard of quality established compensation rate, which, for example, for an elementary teacher is $45,000. We have very few teachers that are paid $45,000. Most of them, as a result of experience in education, make more than $45,000. So locally, you pick it up. That's not unusual. Robinson Farmer Cox study supported that. The health insurance mitigation, that discussion is, we're looking at if we were to do something where we tier our support for employees similar, follow the exact dollar model that the county has, it costs us about $240,000. Salary scales, as Mr. Winkler mentioned, right now we're flat at 0 to 7. If we do nothing, that means we have people from 0 to 8 who are on the same salary level. It means they could go pretty much anywhere else and see compensation growth, whereas we do down here, we're flat. After that flat portion, what's happened is our other salary scale has existing before the depression, recession rather.
It's depressing, Dave.
What's happened is that just been moved to the right. So the salary scale is still there. It's just been moved farther out before people would start moving. But we've been frozen, so no one actually moves up the scale to just get percent adjustments. Part of this endeavor, we do cut two parts to it. One, we allow the people who are currently on the non-flat section to actually get a step increase. And the 1% VRS is mandated by law. And then for the 0 to 7 people, we've talked about creating a new salary scale that has a much different shape and slope, much shallower and more affordable to Fluvanna County. It shows growth over time, but it remains competitive during portions of it with Louisa County. Not throughout its entire scope, it remains competitive, particularly in certain areas. And those two things net between putting the 0 to 7 people, who then become otherwise 0 to 8 next year. That's about 70 people. On the new scale, we then move up there to move in the current people. On the other ones, the net cost there would be about $437,000.
So there's two salary scales.
There would be two teaching scales.
Two teaching.
Then that will also incorporate a new administrative scale that recognizes where the majority of people are. We would not move people on it, other than there are actually three positions plus some assistant principals that need to be adjusted. And those are the ones that were assistant movement, they're a very small part. Staffing, Mr. Storker mentioned that. $299,500 is our typical cost if there were all five teaching positions, and there may not only be five. And what we project for next year, a typical teaching position with VRS, 10-month contract, 8 to 10 years of service with a master's degree, with all their benefits and salaries, about $59,900. So five of those positions, that's where they're typically. So that's pretty much an upper limit of what we would see the staffing be. If we were to replace an aide instead of a teacher, it would be that much less. If we were to find some other clerical person to do something instead of a teacher, then that would be less than that. So these are typically the high end of all the things. Salary adjustment, as I mentioned, salary scale adjustment, that's based on the peak of our salaries this year. So we have people change over the course of the year, our salary expense typically drops because we replace more senior people that came in. So again, these are salary ones, as are the VRS, are probably our peak numbers would be, will drop off as our employee base changes.
Mr. Breslow?
Yes, ma'am.
I'm just curious, this number for staffing, how does that relate to the SOQ increasing funding? You said we have increased funding for some positions that are SOQ related. Are they different or?
You talking about the 299 figure there?
Yes, mm-hmm. Uh-huh. The 299.
And this number would not necessarily be addressed in an SOQ number.
Okay.
For instance, if you added a CTE, we right now would be well within our requirements from an SOQ standpoint. We might come into effect our class size at the high school. We might be adding one there to offer an SOQ requirement. A math specialist that we were looking at possibly at from a county standpoint, given our areas of need based on school improvement, that would not be an SOQ driven position. Some of the special ed certainly would. I don't know if I answered your question.
And in fact, not all necessarily of the special ed positions are actually all SOQ positions, because you can have needs that you see what's in the SOQ funding. They still have a model, and you can still have needs that are greater or more expensive than the model amount. Because again, a special ed teacher is only costing out at $47,000. Mm-hmm. there are very few special ed teachers that actually get paid for the summer because you don't bring them in.
So that we have to pay
until they have more experience, masters, or extended training beyond typically in speech pathology or physical therapy or some other area, autistic training. Those are more expensive people.
Right. So that means if I'm a speech therapist, I'm SOQ, and the SOQ only gives $47,000, but I'm making 50-something, then you locally we have to make up the difference. Mm-hmm. Do we have any SOQ positions that's not filled? I mean, we got our mandates, right. Yeah.
The last category on that list is expiring programs, Mr. Clinton mentioned. We have well over $600,000 in expiring funds in the federal 1003G school improvement program, teacher evaluation pilot, which is a state program, and then which will expire at the end of this year, the strategic compensation initiative, which is a salary program for middle school. Those do have elements. While the overwhelming majority of those programs will go away and we continue most of them, they do have some ongoing things associated typically with monitoring student growth and certain other associated things, software, not people, and some of our training that we need. And that comes up to about $138,000, things that we really need to continue doing. So part of what you do with the teacher evaluation problem as a pilot, you have to continue doing things
right to
do
and then you have to pay for it.
Mm-hmm. And that's a much smaller portion than the total teacher evaluation pilot, but it's things that we have to do as do our neighbors. But that's what's left out of that well over $600,000 of expiring funds. So that comes to right now total of 1.5. I know Mr. Nichols had a slightly lower number. But this is
it's okay. It'll take me hours to go back and redo the budget now, but it's okay.
This is again, as I described it, believed to be a peak number unless something happens radically in the General Assembly to increase requirements. We're not sure what's going to happen. We know that the timeline is, as soon as they get a little more organized, they're going to pass the governor's budget to their two money committees in the two houses. By the last day of February, the houses have to come up with their budgets and get something ready to roll to the governor, so in March the governor can either accept it, line item things, or not be happy with anything. So we're not sure, and this is always an interesting time when we have a new governor and you have two houses that are as split as they are, so we're not sure what's going to happen there.
So right now, the increase in the budget is 1.5 million.
That was the early one based on
that's
the
government's
budget. That's based on very preliminary information.
Okay.
For example, the health insurance mitigation discussion goes all the way back to our August meetings with the school board, mm-hmm. where they said, look at what our neighbors are doing in health insurance. Mm-hmm. What are they doing? And what are particularly people with local choice doing? We looked around. The county plan was in the middle of what our neighbors are doing. So they said, what would it cost to do that with our current census of participants? So that's all that goes back to the summer. The other items, of course, VRS came right out of the governor's budget. There's not much we can do there. That wasn't any good plan from the school board salary scales they talked about. Please look at those. And we've been doing that through the fall. Staffing, that's something that we're interested in. And I will mention right now, we're literally in the middle of the school efficiency review. They've been here reviewing finance and last week. They're here doing everything else this week in this midpoint. And it's entirely possible they may suggest some staffing needs for efficiency's sake, or sometimes you need to add people to do things in a more sensible, efficient way. It's early and it's hard to read the tea leaves of what they're saying. But by Friday, we may have a better idea of where they're going with that. The final report from that will be out in April or May. We will have discussions with them and probably include as we get preliminary information. And that's the role of the next.
I just have a question because I've heard a lot, and I know this is not the Board of Supervisors' business, so what you do with your salary schedule, I want to make that clear. But are you eventually going to have one salary scale? Are you merging?
No, well, one of the things we're looking at, and these are not proposed, these are in discussion.
These are models.
Yeah, these are models, would be two different salary scales. New employees coming in with eight, any new employee or any employee with eight or less years would go along on the scale, a new scale. The other folks would be nine or more would be grandfathered into the old scale.
Okay.
when you look at it, mm-hmm. and it's that jump at about year 20,
yes.
it's just not sustainable
yes.
over the period of time.
Right.
You move those 70 plus employees, mm-hmm. there's
right.
the bigger jumps that they're making.
But that bigger jump is around 16 years, or it used to be, in the same scale.
20.
15, 16,
it's 20 years.
20 years now. Mm-hmm. So you're pushing it back.
Because we pushed the entire scale.
Right, okay.
And that salary scale was developed when the schools had a budget of close to $40 million.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I want to make sure, too, is that you understand that we have not had our first formal budget work session that was scheduled last week, and we had to cancel it due to the inclement weather. And that's scheduled, we've rescheduled that, and that's going to take place on the 30th with this board. So, you know, we anticipate looking at these numbers more in depth, but wanted to give you some information that we had.
Yeah.
And some of the things that are on this list are things that we have to do.
Here's one thing I'd like to ask. You brought up the two numbers when you got where you were short, where we shorted ourselves. Can we go back and look in the past? Have we normally been short, but the schools had enough in their budget to cover it that we didn't have to come back and ask? Or is that just
exactly
just in the last two years?
One of the things that we've looked at back over time is that there have been other instances with other neighboring counties and within our former school budgeting years where there had been enough funds in there that if this had happened, it would not have been an issue.
Right.
But that's my thing is historically, if we had other incidents where we've come up short, but you had enough money left over because we were able to give you more 10 years
ago. And just like Mr. Breslauer said as well, you know, when you were looking at even salary scales, when you're even talking about money that you're using to bring staff into a division, when you have the availability, mm-hmm. and that was a budget that had been sustained for so long, that when you bring people in on that, it's an expectation that
right.
it's going to continue.
Sure.
Well, you had so much growth
mm-hmm.
with the students.
That was a time that
so
we had a lot of growth.
So you were under-projecting because you were afraid to go up. So
mm-hmm.
so you really never over-projected before except last year and
mm-hmm.
evidently this year.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, you know, when your flush your state was giving you all kind of money. A couple million dollars, I think, one year the
mm-hmm.
state gave
mm-hmm.
the school system. So...
Yeah, and the thing is that our fund balance was happy because a school used to turn in so much money back.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the board sitting fussing with the school saying, we gave it to you, spend every penny. And they were bringing back $400,000, $500,000, $700,000 one time. That's how we did our fund.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
One
so
time I think it was actually
yeah.
$900,000.
And I think
close to a million.
Yeah.
We trust that you're going to do what you do. I just hate to have you have to come back. And
so I know we're upset with that.
Chairman, can you? I'd like to know the timeline on the school efficiency review.
Going up pretty
because
if,
when you originally talked about the school efficiency review, it was
in fact,
some things you had to do if you accepted the results or you had to pay for things. I need to know the timeline on that and what the costs associated. There was a cost for the study. If you accepted the results and implemented, then you didn't pay for something else. But what's the timeline on what we pay for?
Under the change statute, we had to pay a substantial portion up front and pay that. It was not as high as we thought. It was a couple thousand less than our estimates. It was about $47,000. They invoiced us in signing when we were they invoiced us again in November and we paid them the first portion. We have to pay a small residual amount. And that's under the presumption that we will implement 90%+ of the recommendations or all comparable alternatives within 2 years, two fiscal years after the completion of the study, which will be in the formal report will be in April and May. That's when it's public.
So fiscal 15 and 16 is when you would have to implement changes.
By 17, we have
to
have
require.
Changes.
Okay.
And
what if you don't implement those changes?
We have to pay for a small difference. It's not a large difference.
Okay.
And those changes are also negotiable. They present the report to the school board, and then there's negotiations that go along with those.
And you have to do 90%? Over 90%. And what things do they cover now, again?
They cover division administration, which includes policy and governance.
Okay.
Food service, educational service delivery, transportation, technology, facilities management, finance, human resources.
And what,
what budget
they're scrutinizing? Just a 1 year budget?
They've asked, we've given them well over 1,000 pages of documents.
Very thorough.
But any impacts won't be in, any impacts will be in fiscal year 15 potentially.
We'll start getting some feelings. So if we get some ideas of where they're going with this, we'll start seeing some of it. We'll start seeing some of it to be implemented in 15.
Tell them 16.
Well, we can.
It's just 16. We're going to be pretty far down the trail if you're giving us indications in April, because the board's going to be approving a budget in April.
Right.
Well, and they have set up meetings with school board members on Friday as well. So that intends to be part of my question, is what have you seen? It's not formal, but I think that they need to discuss with their findings with the board as we discuss and give them information that they're also looking for to assist with their report.
And that'll be documented, right? Then everyone get a copy of that?
Yeah.
Well, it will be an interesting discussion because part of the agreement is this all falls under executive working papers, superintendent. That means it's not, a lot of that won't be shared with elected officials because then it's public information. It's not public information until we resolve everything. So, and that's part of the agreement that we have signed as a memorandum of understanding between the school board and the Virginia Department of Planning and Budget. So there's only so much that they can actually lay out. And until they, and they will make a formal presentation to the school board, that's when it becomes public. The whole 300 plus the 400 page document becomes public information. Until then, it's more planning and budget document.
And you all will become a perfect school board, right?
Yeah, they already are.
We
are.
We come a better.
Come up with a perfect. Yes. All right. Any more questions for the school board members?
I think it's a good summary.
Very good. Thank you all so much.
Give us a little feel, even though it's not definitive.
Yes, and we'll always change.
Well, again, thank you for your time this evening.
Yes,
and we'll be seeing you next time.
Tell Gina how he feels better. Goodness. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. All right. Now we will go to our consent agenda. You want to pull anything from the consent agenda? We have open space application. We have three open space applications, appointment of zone administrator, and resolution, secondary road addition. Roslyn Way, Kathy Court, and Justin Drive. Anyone
want to
pull
anything? Well, those open space ones.
Yes. You want to pull all three?
Yes.
All three. That's J, K, and L.
Did we get some information on those or anything?
Not yet, but we will. Mr. Weaver had asked about some formatting and some greater specifications like we do in the planning reports.
Right.
These come out of the Commissioner of the Revenue's office, and I'll work with the Commissioner to update those files. I can't get them updated for this package, but to include potentially the plat and an address for the properties we're talking about, so that you can see it and where it is located on a map.
Yeah, okay. It's not in here.
Yeah, it's not very clear. We can maybe update that process and procedure for it.
Okay, so do we need to put that in any formal anything so we understand?
I don't believe so. It's just something I'll work with the commissioner on to update that format. So the next time we do open space applications, it'll include a little more specificity to make it a little bit more like a planning package that comes forward, has a little bit of information in it, shows the tax map partial and the address, and the document itself will have a little more specificity. But that's just an iterative process to update those.
So you're going to correct these after we approve these then? get the address and...
We can add, we can amend the address to these three and put it in the public record so that it's in file. Right, we can certainly do that, Mr. Weaver.
Okay. Is that okay?
That'll be fine.
I don't think that's a problem because they're identified by tax map parcel.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean anything to anybody.
I know what you're saying, but what I'm saying is that there's no question of what property is being talked about, so if you just identify
that's
by
right,
an alternative
I understand that.
In the record, I don't see a problem with that.
But I don't know where it is. The public doesn't know where it is.
I know.
And we need to be clear.
Don't disagree with you. I'm just saying that if you adopt it and then add that information, I think that's acceptable.
That's fine. That's the main thing.
Okay. Then.
So I move to approve the consent agenda, which includes appointment of the zoning administrator, the resolution of secondary road addition, and the three open space applications from Ginger Johnson, Jeffrey Johnson, and Melissa Marks. I just tried to identify that.
Yeah, thank you.
The ones.
All right, do we have a second?
Second.
All right, we have a motion by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mr. Sheridan. All in favor?
Aye.
We have aye, and the chair votes aye, so we have 4-0. Next is unfinished business. Fusty is...
Madam Chairman, the some questions came up the last time. Really, I think Mr. Weaver asked a couple of questions, and I made some statements. And I just wanted Mr. Payne to clarify some legal information, legal standing about a sanitary district and our responsibilities towards the FUSDs, the Fork Union Sanitary District, and what can and cannot be done. And so Mr. Payne is going to clarify that for us. I sent you that in advance, but we'll have it linked up here too, and essentially address these three questions. The second thing is that I just got up on the screen here is you had asked about taxing of that district previously, and the last time there was any different taxing done, ad valorem tax, the tax rate was different in 76 through 1980, and some additional revenue was brought into the 14th century district at that time, but in the district itself. So that's the old rates that I got from the treasurer's office. So, Mr. Payne, I can pull up the code that you've got in front of if you want, or however you want to do it.
I don't know that we're going to need to do that. I sent you this, a selection of the code sections. They are decidedly opaque. So if you had trouble following what they say, don't be surprised, because I do too every time I read them. let me address first how their districts are created, what they are, and how they're enlarged and abolished. There's a statute, it's 21-119, that's very specific about what a sanitary district is, and that is it's a special taxing district of the county. And the purpose of the statute seems to be to distinguish between the position of property in a sanitary district and property that is subject to special improvements. You don't see that much in counties, but you see it in municipalities, particularly towns, where the municipality will say, we want to have a sidewalk improvement program for Maple Street, and we're going to assess everybody that fronts on Maple Street X dollars per frontage foot of their property. That is not what a sanitary district is. It's a special taxing district of the county. It is not a separate political entity. So it's not like a service authority. It's not like a municipality. It's not like a school district. It's a special taxing district of the county.
And the reason for that is?
I have absolutely no idea. It's way before my time.
The reason why is it a special taxing district? You might explain that.
I don't know. This is a device.
It's to pay for the water.
Well, sure. Oh, sure. If that's what you mean. Sure. This was a device that the General Assembly came up with many, many years ago to allow for the establishment of these utility services in areas outside towns and outside towns and cities. Understand that in years past, if you had these utilities, they were provided either by a private company or by a municipality. So that, for example, in Albemarle County, there were no public utilities except public, I mean, when water and sewers, what I'm talking about, except those that were supplied by either the university or the city of Charlottesville. And that changed in the mid-60s. What's happened over the course of time is that there was the General Assembly perceived a need for more rural areas to be served by this kind of utility. And the sanitary district was one means of doing that, one device to do that, to provide water and sewer services for areas that were otherwise didn't have any means to provide them. Does that answer that question?
Yes, I just wanted to make it clear that it was a system devised
to be self-sustaining.
Self-sustaining, and also you're going to have some meetings over there in groups. Have you already had those?
Yes, sir.
And what was the conclusion? And are you going to bring any of that back to the board? Because from what I understand, they're in a hole each year. I think it's up to $80,000 now that we've loaned to them.
$70,000 is the current loan.
Okay, $70,000.
$70,000.
So, you know, what conclusion? I've never heard the conclusion you came to as to how we're going to pay for that and what you're going to do.
Well, we'll come to the board with a proposal. Mm-hmm.
Let me.
We haven't done it yet because we just got done the meeting in the Fork Union Sanitary District last week.
Let me say, Mr. Weaver, you're correct that the scheme that's set out in this set of statutes makes clear to me that the intent of the statutory scheme is that the sanitary district be self-sustaining.
Right.
There is no provision for the county to subsidize it. There's
you can loan them money, but
you can make loans, but loans sure. Only on, well, you can do two things. Under the terms of the various statutes, and I haven't included all the statutes in this title, but I've included some of them, it is lawful for the county to advance funds to a sanitary district
sure.
At the outset.
We've already done that.
Seed money, if you will. We did that years and years ago.
Yeah.
You can do that at the outset, but you can't keep doing it. And the statute makes perfectly clear that any money advanced like that must be reimbursed. There is also a procedure for the county to establish what's called a unified district, a unified system. And that's one of the options that we talked about very briefly some time ago, where the county would establish its own system and then come and essentially amalgamate with the
sanitary. Consolidate them.
The term the statute uses is unified.
Uh-huh.
And consolidate.
But that's a procedure you have to go through to get there.
Well, the procedure is pretty specific. It's in 21-118.5. In a nutshell, you got to have a county system that then becomes unified with the sanitary district.
Can we take on their debt when we consolidate?
Yes, we have to. It doesn't destroy their debt. It doesn't destroy the sanitary district. We have to use the money from the unified system to fund the debt.
So if we created something akin to a Fluvanna County Water Authority
Water Authority is a different issue.
Okay, that's the question.
That's an entirely different issue. A Water Authority is a separate entity. It's a separate public corporation.
Mr. Payne, I think the big question is, what responsibility does the Board of Supervisors have for the Sanitary District? Is the Sanitary District just a group of people over here over in Fork Union, Cloverdale, and so forth, and they're not, you know, they're Fluvannians, but we have no authority, no say-so about what goes in the center.
Are we still responsible? That is not an accurate statement.
Thank you. I want you to tell the right statement.
I was quibbling with your statement that the board has no authority. Yes. Because this board is the board of directors for the sanitary district.
Say it again.
The board of supervisors is the board of directors for the service authority. I'm sorry, the sanitary district.
But I think the contention.
He's turned around and looked at me, so I thought I was going to have to run.
Who's disagreed with that?
Oh, you don't disagree.
Oh, we have the authority, but you are still a separate entity, which you are responsible for your own debt.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You think I don't know that we set rates and all that?
Yeah, I hope so.
Well, how would you miss that?
No, I haven't missed that, but I know that there are many times you have talked about the sanitary district as if we didn't have any type, nothing to do with them.
No, I've never said that.
But I've misinterpreted it.
You sure have.
Well, I'm sorry, but I've interpreted it that way. But it's good that we've got it clarified that that's not what you think.
Well, I think the question may have come up about whose responsibility is it financially, and there was some discussion at the last meeting. That's why Mr. Payne is clarifying this. You cannot go out and tax the rest of the Savannah citizens to pay for that system.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Although, if you ended up doing a unified...
We're not in a position to do a unified system right now.
Right.
We could do it in the future.
But if we dissolve the sanitary district, does that mean we can't dissolve it unless we get rid of the debt?
Abolishing the sanitary district. Every time I say service authority, I mean sanitary districts.
Yeah.
please bear with me. Abolishing a district is set out in 21-117.1. Sanitary districts are established by the circuit court. They are also enlarged, contracted, and abolished by the circuit court. And if you wanted to abolish the sanitary district, there is a procedure for doing that which basically is similar to the way it's done to establish one. And that is either the governing body or a specified number of citizens in the boundaries of the district apply to have it abolished, and then the court decides whether it's appropriate based on the factors set out in the statute, and those are, for example, whether the property within the district will be benefited by the abolition of the district. And I suppose that's possible if, for example, the town of Scottsville, I'm making this up now, but the town of Scottsville were to expand its water system into the county and provide a better, more regular supply at lower rates. That might be an instance where it would be appropriate to abolish the system. Mrs. Booker, you are correct that one of the prerequisites to abolishing the district is the liquidation of the debts. And that can be done in a couple of different ways. The most obvious is paying it off. Another one would be to have the debt taken over by the county as a whole. And there's some more specific provisions. So it can be done. It's not something that I would do lightly, and it certainly wouldn't be appropriate to do it without having something to replace it.
And what you have there, I think most of that's on our iPad.
It is.
You sent it from what it sounds like.
It's all on.
Okay, because I went through that on the iPad, and it sounds like it's quite repetitious.
It is.
Okay.
What is contemplated by the statutory scheme is there are two sources of revenue for the district, two ongoing sources of revenue, and I'm not counting things like federal grants, state grants, things like that. That's in addition. The two sources of revenue are payment of rates for services and district taxes. And a district tax, and this is where we come back to what I was saying about the local improvements thing. District taxes don't apply only to people that are actually served by the district's facilities. They would apply to anybody to all property in the district. Mrs. Booker knows more about this than I do because, as you can see, I became county attorney in 1987, and that was 7 years after the county stopped imposing these ad valorem taxes. Ad valorem is not a mysterious term. It means proportional to the value of the property. So the traditional gas tax is not an ad valorem tax because it's imposed X cents per gallon. The traditional property tax is an ad valorem tax because it's so many cents per $100 of value. This is an ad valorem tax. And the table Mr. Nichols has given you is a good illustration of that, so that if property in Kent Store, if there were property in Kent Store, it would have been taxed in 1980 at 90 cents, whereas a property in the Fork Union Sanitary District would have been taxed at 90 plus 10. So the it's the same value, it's the same calculation, it's just a different numerator. I think I've already answered the third question, but the authority of the county to subsidize the district, there are of course questions. What does subsidizing mean? Because we certainly provide all kinds of logistical support for the district, accounting and things like that. But in terms of the county shifting funds from the county's general fund to the Fork Union Sanitary District funds, there is no authority for that except to the extent of what the statute characterizes as loans in anticipation of revenue. Those have to be repaid. They are required to bear interest, although the interest can be zero. I think they can only exist for a fiscal year. And what we've done in the past is we've actually rolled them over a couple of times.
Rolled them over.
Yeah. But the
so that's what you all supposed to be working on.
We did. We have a model, and the model has been laid out and presented to some of the citizens that came to the meeting last week. It'll be presented again to the Fork Union Sanitary District Advisory Board, and then it'll come back to this board. And the model will show you how you can repay the $70,000 in debt over what period of time in multiple different scenarios, either 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, and also have enough additional cash coming into the system to be able to do maintenance and system repairs. And so, Mr. Stevens, the first blush model is to pay the $70,000 over the first 2 years. In year three, that extra revenue comes in towards building an asset base to do significant upgrades
really
to the system.
You really do need that.
Without question. Yes. And it's going to require increased rates for the sanitary district. And one of the things we looked at was the potential for, well, the Fork Union Military Academy is a nonprofit. Therefore, they wouldn't pay the ad valorem taxes. Mm-hmm. But they might pay a different water rate as a large customer user.
Because that was going to be a question of mine. I remember from a meeting a few years back, they came in and asked for a reduced water rate or demand.
How much
money does that cost us?
Their water rates are much lower. The big volumes, once you're up above 300,000 gallons, the water rate goes down to currently 457 for 1,000 gallons. Well, maybe that needs to come back up to the standard rate, because then we can make some of that rate off that. Now, that means some cost increase, but we can tell you exactly what the cost increase is going to be. But there is no way. I guess to my point, I had suggested before that maybe because this is a county responsibility and the county board has to set rates and tax that district, I didn't know if there were any ways where the county could take on this debt as a whole, and there clearly aren't now without doing something to dissolve or change the district. So we have to then find some way to work within that sanitary district.
I think it's good the way you're going about it.
Well, we need a very iterative process here. And remember, not everybody's on the same information page, because there's a lot of people have been here a long time, some people have been here a very short time. We're trying to get everybody caught up. But because we're talking now about water systems designed crossroads too, we're going to have to talk about comprehensive look at water in our county and who's responsible for it and what role is what part, and whether we have a water authority, whether we have a unified program, or whatever he says.
Yeah, I think
But anyway, we will come back to you with those rates, sure. And that will be built into the budget for this year.
Right. So. I think we have more of a plan or an understanding about the sanitary district than we have. We have been limping along, mm-hmm. knowing that eventually something's going to happen to one of those wells and we will be in trouble. Now we have a clear understanding of some ways we can go, and I think we need to make the decision as quickly as possible so that we can inform people, educate people, and move on before we have a crisis.
Let me say this. I think for the short term, you're not going to have a lot of choice.
No.
You're going to have to, you have to increase the rates,
right.
Impose the ad valorem tax, or both.
And a lot of people are familiar with those 5 years of taxes, people who were here. And the negative thing that you will hear is that they'll say people don't want to come into buying to the district because of that extra tax. But we're not having any big growth in Falk Union Sanitary District anyway.
Right.
So,
what is the approximate size of the district?
400 customers.
That's it.
Some 400 customers.
But that doesn't include the people that are not customers.
It's 400 right. customers, but that's not the whole area.
Not the whole, and plus
I would say the great physical majority right. of the district is not actually served by the
And they would be subject to the ad valorem tax.
That's correct.
Indeed. And then there are people who use the water, but they're not in the district.
They would be subject to the rates, but not the ad valorem tax.
They would be. Right. So I had. So
Mr. Stevens, when we come brief you, we will have that. I just didn't pull it up tonight, but we have the specific map that shows the exact boundary and lines of the district and who's in the district and who's not. I have not pulled, and we can do this, how many water taps there are in the district that are not hooked up to the system.
Right.
Because that's another thing we'll need to think about.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what the rules are in place right now, but I don't know if there are any rules in place that do not allow someone to re-drill a well in that district if their well fails.
Well, certainly the district has the authority to require that.
And I just don't know what the
mandatory
current rules
hookups
are.
Are one thing that is very specific.
And if we can include the people who are using the water but not in the district, can we put them in the district? You know, how many people are outside of the district that use the water?
Well,
I don't think it's very many.
I understand one thing about that, and I think Mr. Stevens would tell you this a lot better than I can, but one of the things that's unique about this form of revenue is that a water system, a properly designed and operated water system, is a money maker. And anybody that's ever dealt with this, if you go up and ask the Aqua people, they'll tell you that a water system is a money maker, a sewer system is a money loser. And that's one reason we don't have sewer service in the Fork Union District, because it's expensive and it's very hard to pay for. The lesson of that is that when you have a water system, the more customers you have, everything else being equal, the more money you make. So that's one of the reasons that there's authority for the district to reach out beyond its boundaries and serve people,
because
they can do it with, you know, they select people to do it with and get money from them. Mm-hmm. You see that all the time with municipalities. I know the town of Culpeper does that, for example, serves areas in the county that otherwise wouldn't be served. As I say, the city of Charlottesville did until the Albemarle County Water Service Authority was founded.
Is there a current annual operating loss for FUSD or not?
Yes.
Yeah.
For the last couple of years. Well, it depends on the year. It depends on the revenue. Last year was $30,000.
Total net debt right now is $70,000.
Yeah. Total net debt just to us. There's $600,000 in additional debt for infrastructure.
That's
their large debt. The $70,000 is just to the county.
Well, the question I think you're asking is what I would call casual debt.
How much water is it?
Pardon?
Are they tapped out, or do they?
No, they use about 100,000 gallons a day on average now is what the system rates. And Mr. Stevens will have to answer, and Mr. Thomas will have to answer the more specific questions. But about 100,000 gallons a day today. The big problem with FUSD is, three things. One, the rates don't pay for the cost of the system.
Right.
Two, you need to rest the wells so you can maintain the wells. So the water itself can level out, and the systems, the equipment itself, can be worked on and maintenance.
Sure.
So you need to have another well, bring another well online, so that you can then rotate between wells, because now the wells run 24/7. That's just not the way you want to run the system. And then third, they have a very, very aging infrastructure. Forget the wells themselves, just think all the pipes in the ground. It's very old, and it breaks all the time. So you've got three things you've got to work on. But if you work on the front side, on the rates, and you build in paying back the loans to the county, that's what the model that Mr. Stevens has, that has been briefed, and you build in paying back the loans, and you build in enough rates and taxing such that you're creating cash to be able to fund maintenance, either bringing out a new well and or maintenance of the system or replacement of the system, then you can be solvent over time. But it's just a very small system.
And if we didn't have the cell tower attachment up at Bremo Bluff, we would be.
If you didn't have that revenue from that right now, you'd be in really dire straits.
You're lucky to have that.
You would have had to have raised rates a long time ago, because you would have been asking the county. Yeah. They would have been asking the county for $100,000 every year. But
right.
I'm reasonably confident we're going to find a water source, and I'm reasonably confident that you're going to get to a decision point on raising the rates. And I'm reasonably confident that you're going to have a lot of outcry when you try to do this.
Sure.
Mrs. Booker again knows more about this than I do, but one thing you have to recognize is this system isn't the way it was contemplated.
Right.
It doesn't exist the way it was contemplated, mm-hmm. largely because of the natural disasters in the 70s.
Twice. Indeed.
And the system was set up to use surface water from the James. And the two major hurricanes in the early 70s destroyed that infrastructure and left the system with the wells. It's been, I think, a description of limping along is a good one. Yeah.
How would a very long time.
I'm trying to figure out where
they designed that.
In the floodplain.
In a floodplain and not perceive that. Right. How could a rational person do that?
100 years ago,
you have a latter day perception of the problem.
Sure, I do.
Because the all you got to do is note that Columbia and Scottsville were once both bustling ports.
Sure.
That's right. Right.
And the closer they were to the water's edge, the better commerce was. Mm-hmm. And they were down there right near the water's edge until they got wiped out.
You got flooded now and then, and that was no big deal. Now, what happened was Hurricane Camille was a big deal by anybody.
100 years or whatever.
Well, the Mississippi hasn't always run the course that it's running now.
That's right.
You know, so.
Well, the what you have to understand is there's a term called a 100-year flood.
Yes.
That doesn't mean it happens once every 100 years. What it
might
means is statistically, you're going to have that flood once every 100
years. Ours happened twice in 3 years.
Twice,
All right. But,
and now, again, remember that system was designed on surface water and a treatment plant. I'm kind of wondering where the insurance money went when those two plants were destroyed.
Well,
we're 40 years beyond that now. But that should have sustained
the other thing you do need to note is that this system contemplated ad valorem taxes.
Right.
And this table that you got here shows you that it did contemplate that.
Right. Never thought of it.
Speaking of that table, does anybody have any perspective on the 365, 485?
That was in the time when
property values were a lot cheaper.
There's a whole different sequence.
There's an answer to that.
Right.
The answer is that the way it was calculated was based on a percentage of actual value. I don't know why they did that, but if you had a $100,000 house, you take 40% of that, and then, or you know, making up a number, but 40%, and then apply the 365 to per hundred to it. That was abolished in.
Really deceptive.
It apparently was done in the late 70s.
I can assure you that the 58 cents was getting the same amount of money or more than it was the 365 the year before.
Right.
Because local governments are not used to saying, oh, never mind, we don't need your money.
And so, anyone have any perspective on the 22-cent increase from 79 to 80?
I'm sorry?
Does anybody have any perspective on the 22-cent increase? From 79 to 80?
Could have been new school, but it could have been a reassessment. Wasn't. Maybe they hadn't done a reassessment sometime.
Could have been a reassessment. We built schools.
Just like we did this last
year. Could have been a reassessment down, though.
It's more likely to be a reassessment.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it didn't go this last time. You went from 59.81 to 79.5 mm-hmm. after the reassessment of 2017.
Right, right. But that's what I'm saying is your property values have gone down. Yeah.
Right.
Right.
All right. So we've really had good education.
Wait a minute. Mr. Sheridan was asking me a question.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to get a grasp on it because real estate taxes help to pay for it.
It is real estate
tax. Right. Okay. And that's where you put the
ad valorem tax.
Ad valorem tax?
That's why
Hold on. Don't be misled by this term. Ad valorem is simply a type of tax. And what it means is it's based on the value of whatever's being taxed. That's what ad valorem means. Okay. The regular real estate tax is an ad valorem tax. The point here is that in 1976, if you owned a property, the taxable value of which was $100,000, you would have paid $365 in taxes, or whatever that number comes out to. However, if you had the same property, same value, in the Fork Union District, you would have paid $485. And it would have been collected the same way, calculated the same way, but with a different rate.
So our tax rate currently is 79.5. If we put an ad valorem, an ad valorem on top of that for the Fork Union Sanitary District alone, they may get charged on there for a real estate tax next year, 81.5, while the rest of the county would be charged 79.5. That money that comes from that extra 2 cents from those values would go directly back into funding that system.
And and funding the system only.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Very good.
All
right,
let's
speed up. Okay, we're
glad we got over there. Okay, that was unfinished business, right? What I meant to bring up? You know the list that you put for the pending things?
Yes, ma'am.
At the end?
Uh-huh.
Are there any, do we have some things on there that we can, I know some of them have already, they're not pending. They're complete.
You've got that at the bottom.
So, yeah. for instance,
are there some things that we can get rid of?
Mary, is the BOS directives, is that in this package or just the first of the month package?
It's at the end.
It's at the end.
It's
on.
Oh, here it is. I'm sorry. I'll pull it up.
I don't know if it's.
I just couldn't
find it. Page 121, I think.
Okay, so it's on.
It's on. Yeah, it's.
I've got it on the screen now.
Okay, pending. The one with spend no more than $4,000, that'll go off. Right,
we'll take that one off.
All right, the next one will go off. No, the next one stays.
No, that goes off because
okay.
We prepared the counteroffer
and
presented it. And we've asked Aqua for a response.
Okay.
And their attorney is checking with the client and will let us know.
Right, and the next one set up a 1.5 day. We've done that. And there are some things that's way back, like
February of this last year.
February, January. Do we want to move some
of those? So let's go from the bottom of the page here on the screen. August 1st, investigate Carriersbrook Wells and Thomasville existing unused James River water intake. That's mm-hmm. ongoing.
Okay.
You can take it off. We are doing that, and it's ongoing, and you're getting reports on those, but I've left it there because it is an ongoing project.
Right.
The next one, continue the Aqua Virginia PPA process, it's still ongoing.
Right.
So, again, I've left it there.
But is there somewhere that there should be a projected completion date? Or
it's difficult.
Or we can just
it's difficult to do that.
Well, on the Aqua one, I can't put completion one. And on the
That's
other one,
ongoing.
I'm not sure. Just remember that 6 months ago, you didn't have this report.
Yeah, I know.
It's a brand new report. And so I don't necessarily, well, I can do whatever the board wants. I don't want to necessarily take on too many extra projects.
Right, I don't want
reports.
You to do, I'm
this
trying
is just
to,
kind of a tracking list for us to make sure.
I think that's good. You
I'm
need
trying
it.
To
we didn't lose directives.
Remove some. But okay, well, you have a 2 January 13.
Well, there's a bunch of them that are going to come off this week now that you've seen this report. It goes back, we review it now. The policy the organized town hall meeting for FUSD, that's done.
Mm-hmm.
The developed policy for use of county vehicles, the final piece of that is coming February 5th. The cash proper guidance, because we changed over planning directors, that will then come back up to you for what you'll have a cash proper planning guidance when Mr. Stewart gets that out of the planning commission. So that's still ongoing. the cell phone stipend policy.
You've done the cell phone?
I just haven't had a chance to
right.
do it. And
okay.
it's hanging out there. I just haven't had a chance to do
well,
it.
Well, you're
a
in the budget policies. Process and all, too.
It
right?
is.
And this is, and, next and, couple, 3 months, is you're going to be tied up pretty tight.
It is. But frankly, if you want a cell phone or you want a stipend, it's essentially the same cost.
Right.
The proposal would be, I think Mr. McMahon can verify the figures, but we pay about $50 for that smartphone. If we require someone to have a phone, they've got a choice. Do you want a issued phone or do you want to use your own phone? If we issue you a phone, the county pays $50. If you use your own phone, we would give you a stipend. I just haven't had a chance to write up the policy.
Okay.
I mean, it's hanging around, but.
All right. That's.
The board retreat is already scheduled. The speed study. I'm just waiting on the results of those speed studies on Route 6 and on Route 15.
Mm-hmm.
So that takes a while for VDOT to get those done. The curve signs on Blue Mountain Road are done now. That can come off. The two from January from the treasurer's office, you'll have to follow back up with the treasurer, ask your county minister to follow back up with the treasurer. They've been on there since January. And probably ought to look at those two. Especially in concert with the budget. The Rural Land Use Committee, I don't know what this one was. This was before, oh, I'm sorry. I don't know what it was about. I was here at the time, but I just don't recall that one.
Which one?
This number... Rural Land Use Committee, prepare cash or profit policies and a draft zoning and subdivision ordinances.
Is that just reviewing land use policies?
I guess. I'm going to be coming to you with land use policies anyway through the commissioner's office to just give you all of you an update.
There was a study on that. There's been a report done on it. But again, we've had some real tumultuous times with personnel in the planning department.
So anyway, I'll clean these up, and about probably 8 or 10 of those will be on the completed and moved down to the green.
Good.
So you'll see them the following right. report on green, and then they come off. Once they stay on until they're complete, mm-hmm. then they're on one more cycle as complete, and then they come off. Right. Although we have a file that has all these in there.
Mm-hmm.
So anything you direct at a meeting gets added to this list.
Okay.
But thanks for the reminder. We'll
did
we'll
anyone?
That.
Have go to any of their commission meetings that you're assigned to. I don't think it,
I did not make your, it yesterday because
okay I gave I went to the meeting for the Parks Recreation. I think I kind of forgot you took my spot. They kind of looked at me kind of funny when I came in.
Thank you very much.
Take it off the calendar, Mrs. Booker.
I just played it off. I said, well, I want to say goodbye to you all. But
played it off.
Yeah.
That's good.
So they are waiting anxiously for you to yes, join ma'am. The group, and you're going to enjoy them. Okay. Do we have, now we've done the unfinished business. Any more new business? If not, I will open up for our second public comments. Please keep your comments to 5 minutes. Stay on the topic and direct your comments to the board. Do we have anyone who would like to speak to us? Okay, then I close the second public comment. We don't have, members here all want to go back in closed session to talk to Mr. Fred about anything?
We're available to do that if you want to.
If you want to,
rediscuss
that. Pretty clear.
No, I'm not very clear. I'm more confused in a way. So,
oh,
but
what do you think?
You know, I don't have to go back in.
Okay.
I'll talk to him on the phone.
No, I need to be more productive to read the package.
Right. Okay, we need to read.
I think it's a good
okay.
idea.
Okay. Yeah. Appreciate it. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
So made.
Before you get a second, just a reminder: the new agenda, because you changed the time. So the new agenda for the first meeting of the month will start at 4:00. Run up to 6:00, break for 1 hour for dinner, and resume at 7:00 if needed. So, for instance, if the meeting's done in an hour and a half and there's no work session, then you'll be done at 5:30 and just be done and walk away. If there is a work session in the evening or you haven't finished the rest of the meeting things, that's how the agendas are built. So it's got an hour block in there, and it says, you know, recess for dinner 6 to 7 if needed. And so just remember to mark your calendar from 4 until whenever. And remember, from now through the end of April, you largely will have work sessions on those nights and some additional work sessions on the alternate Wednesdays too for budget season. So you've got a lot of days when you'll need to be here for budget meetings.
You've booked our overtime in the budget.
Exactly. The overtime is in there. Your paycheck will go up exponentially during budget season.
Well, yeah. We get the big bucks.
All
baby.
Right. We have
okay,
a
the
motion.
Gratitude of the people will go up exponentially. That's it.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
A second.
All right. We have a motion by Mr. Weaver, second by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Chair votes aye.
Thank you very much.
Thank you all for a nice, for a good meeting.
Huh? Two down, 872.
200, yep, two down.